And we are back with the Non-20 Podcast. I'm your host, Logan Quinton. You can find me at LDQ Sports. The battery wouldn't be complete without my man, Charlie Collier. You can find him at CCollier64. Charlie, things didn't start off the way we planned last weekend as far as the Vols and their expectations going out to Como. I don't know what was colder, the weather, the bats, the umpires, a mix of everything. How concerned are you going into week two of SEC play?
Goodness. It's tough, right? Because on one hand, I mean, Missouri's played some better baseball this year. Baseball is one of those sports where, you know, a bad weekend can just kind of happen. And you don't want to start to hit the panic button. You don't want to worry too much. You know, you went and played in an uncharacteristic environment for baseball, both with weather and just with, you know, fan attendance too. And, you know, it was a Missouri team that even last year seemed to have a good game plan for you. They were ready for all three pitchers to attack the zone. They were swinging early in at bats and, you know, they limited the big hits. So, you know, on one hand, I don't really want to hit the panic button, but my concern has been, you know, my levels of concern have been raised. I didn't really love that, you know, while you were getting beat by Missouri, you didn't really seem to have a ton of, like, edge to you. You know, it's a ton of fight. Like, it didn't seem to – I don't know if, like, piss them off is the right word, but, you know, after you went – you know, you get beat the first game, you go down early, you would like to see more of urgency, I guess, in the response. And, you know, in the first game of the doubleheader that you lost 7-4, you did score three runs in the last two innings. Like, you showed a little bit of fight there, but – just in a general sense, the response in games two and games three, and even just within those games, wasn't really a response I liked all that much.
Yeah, and I agree with some of the points there. But I'll tell you, after listening to Tony V and his media availability this morning, I kind of like what I've heard, even dating back to, like, you know, Sunday night. They got out of there. There was no, like, team meeting. They took cold showers, hit the bus, got back to Knoxville. I thought that was probably the right thing to do. And then we saw a brand new lineup, not just a B midweek lineup. This was, you know, Blake Burke was the only surefire starter in there. And then today Tony V said, you know, as far as the grit factor, the fight, you know, you touched on it, Charlie. He said, you know, it's not so much this team doesn't have grit, because they do. He said they've kind of gone too much the other way, like, to where there's, you know, there was some little bit of friction in the dugout when things didn't go the right way and guys, you know, arguing and chirping and this and that. Nothing, like, completely overboard, but I take it as a good thing, right? Because that tells me these guys know how good they are. They know they're better than this. And I don't care who you are. In a baseball season, whether you're the Tennessee Vols, the Atlanta Braves, the New York Yankees, it's a long season. It's a long game. And you're not going to go through a season without any friction at all. And so I would rather this happen now because you can't be getting swept, you know, facing a team like that. And we touched on Missouri is better. That is, they are clearly better. But that's not the expectation to go to Como and get swept by any means. So I'd rather it happen now. And you've got a great opportunity with the Aggies coming to town. The weather's going to be warm. They're going to be juiced. I really like this as a bounce back spot, but man, you you got to go to Baton Rouge next weekend. So you better do something. Just win the series by any means. You know, that's take care of home. That's what they need to do. And I'm pretty confident that they can do that. Just based on what I'm hearing, what I've sensed over the course of the week, I expect them to win this series. I really like the matchup, by the way, and we'll go ahead and get into it. We'll start out with the weekend rotation, because we know what the Vols have, and Burns, Beam, Dolander, they didn't live up to expectation last week. That's part of why the Vols struggled so much, particularly with Dolander early in game one. And we'll touch on the Aggies. But first, we're going to let Charlie introduce a lineup that will not let you down by any means.
Yes. This lineup that will not let you down is the lineup of cookies over at Crumble Cookies. This week, looking at the lineup here, man, at your rotation of cookies, you're starting things off, a sea salt toffee. It's a delicious infusion of toffee, chocolate chips. They got a little dash of sea salt on there. I'm pretty intrigued by that one. There's also a lemon poppy seed. It's a zesty lemon cookie packed with yummy poppy seeds. It's stuffed in a lemony filling and smothered with a lemon almond glaze. I'll tell you what, too, the flavor combo, almond and lemon, sneaky good. This is the one that really has caught my eye. This is like your Chase Dolander, Chase Burns, Drew Beam, all packaged into one. A monster is just the title. Just monster. The description, simple as this. All the flavors you could ask for, peanut butter, chocolate candies, chocolate chips, brown sugar, oatmeal. I mean, it's just a little bit of everything. You just take the best from all of it. And then you have Texas sheet cake. Fitting, Texas A&M coming to town, Texas sheet cake, raspberry cheesecake, and as always, your classic pink sugar.
That sounds amazing. That sounds like a zero ERA, zero whip, just across the board. I got to go with cheesecake, man. The raspberry cheesecake, things are warming up, and I feel like with that treat, you get a little bit of taste of spring and summer. So I'm going with that one this week.
For me, it's got to be that monster. It's just too many things in one. You know, I have to try it.
That would be my pivot. So, folks, go check them out. Our friends at Crumble Cookies here in Knoxville, you can find them on Clinton Highway, on Parkside Drive. There's a new location in Maryville coming real soon. And many more to come. Stay tuned for more announcements from Crumble Cookie. Now we will pivot to the weekend rotation. Let's look at the Aggies right here. Nathan Detmer, if you followed our content going back last year, you would know that we've talked a lot about Nathan Detmer. He's kind of old, reliable. If he's got that slider going, that's his out pitch, and he is really tough to beat. If not, you know, he's still going to hang in there. He's got some pitchability, but he's not the same pitcher as when he's got that out pitch working for him. He's the Friday night guy. Torrey Wansing, the lefty, he's been nice this year. 2.42 ERA, 130 whip, 37K to 12 walk. But there's Sunday guy. So this rotation has been firm up to this point, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Chris Cortez, as you see on the graphic, not good. 1.86 whip. Don't even look at the ERA. They are bouncing him to the pen this weekend. Smart move for Coach Schloss. And instead, it's probably going to be Justin Lampkin. He's another lefty. He's been working out of the pen for the Aggies. He's been really good. 1.33 ERA, 103 whip, 25K to 8 walk, and 20 and a third. So some good work by Lampkin. This staff is not deep. They do have really good arms in Lampkin and Johnston in the pen, and they've got a really talented freshman, Shane Sadeo. He's another lefty. That's another theme with the Aggies. Like, their best guys are lefties outside of Nathan Detmer. let's see what Sadeo can do in week two of SEC play. He's been phenomenal so far for the Aggies in his frost year. 19 K, the three walk, 15 and a third. But once you get into the pen, to that in the thick of the pen, you know, if you make them work and you keep turning that bullpen door, that's where things start to separate. And then in terms of the Vols rotation, we know what to expect. Dolander, Burns, Beam. Charlie, what's like your main takeaways from the rotation and what they looked like last weekend?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of said it there. When if you can make them have to use middle relief, they're in trouble. You know, if Detmer and if Torrey Wansing and if like it if you know newly into the starting rotation now, Justin Lamkin, like if those three guys can get deeper into games and you know shrink that A&M bullpen and really just get them to their high leverage guys, then you know A&M can cause you a lot of problems, but. Yeah, it's not the deepest bullpen. You know, if you make them get to those middle relievers, if you make them get deeper into that bullpen, things should be able to open up. I'll be pretty intrigued to see how Chris Cortez does now out of the pen. You know, I assume he's not just going to go from Sunday starter to not getting any work at all. And, you know, Schlossnagel, he was talking to the media this week, and he said that they still have confidence in him, that, you know, Lamkin had just been hearing the opportunities given, but they certainly weren't giving up on Cortez, and, you know, they think they can get something out of him from the bullpen. But if he comes out of the pen this weekend against Tennessee, I'll be very intrigued just to see where he's at from a confidence standpoint, you know, just from a comfortability standpoint, now shifting down to the bullpen. Could be an opportunity maybe for Tennessee to really jump on somebody. But, I mean, you mentioned it again. It's pretty good pitching. Nathan Detmer, man, he has the ability to be both the really good Nathan Detmer and the somewhat average Nathan Detmer at times. I mean, there were times like last year towards the end of the season that he looked unstoppable. And, you know, I think it was him – in that Omaha game, right, against Notre Dame, right, that he just threw an absolute gem, like seven scoreless in that one. So when he's on, dangerous guy, can really shut down a lineup. But, you know, when he's not playing at that high of a level, I don't think there's anything overly intimidating.
Yeah, and I think what I'm interested in, I kind of that Friday matchup, I think, is a really good matchup. Detmer, Dolander. After that, it really seems like some separation between like Burns and Wansing and Beam and Lamkin. But as we saw last week, you know, you could have the best pitching staff in America and get swept. So, I'm interested to see what Dolander does Friday night because I'm still impressed with Burns. The box score, I don't feel like really tells the story of what he did in Como. If you look at the metrics, Burn is just up at the top. It's, you know, some of the advanced pitching stuff, it's Paul Skeens and then either Sullivan from Wake or Burns right there, right behind Skeens in terms of some of the metrics of pitching. Everything looked good. He just flat out got beat on a few at bats. He balked in a run. Maui Ahuna lost a ball, a high pop up in shallow outfield that could have ended the inning. So things could have looked a lot different for Burns. I thought Beam pitched pretty well, but Dolander, that was the concern. Dolander getting shelled early, and there's some data starting to leak out. As it pertains to Dolander, he's not got the spin, not got the tilt with the fastball or the curveball. You know, he's been working in that curveball this year. He was heavy fastball slider last year. He wants to really firm up a 3-4 pitch mix going into the draft and quite honestly needs it anyway. But so, yeah, it's when you can't really locate because you don't have the tilt or the spin going with your fastball or curveball, you're going to get hit around like that. And the funny thing is you know, his fastball doesn't have the rise because of the spin and the tilt, but it's still a plus pitch right now up to this point. That's how good this dude is. So when he figures it out, and it could totally be, it's early in the season. You see this from a lot of pitchers, even in the pros. Could be weather related. The balls are hot. Normally you see when the balls are hot, you're going to see more spin from the pitchers, including more home runs and more offense. Not always the case, but that's usually the case. So I don't know if the balls have anything to do with it. But I expect Nolander to find his groove and get a grip figuratively or literally. And I think he'll be, whether it's this week or next week, that's really what I'm aiming for and expecting for Nolander to bounce back and look like the best pitcher or one of the best pitchers in the country. Do you have any cause for concern with Nolander or the others?
I've officially reached a status where I'm a little bit worried about Nolander, actually.
No, I get it. I understand.
Let's mention it again. Like, yeah, some of those just the fastball, like the spin rate not being there or like it was last year. The fact that, you know, going back to his final outing of the year where he kind of got hit early and looked a little bit uncomfortable, had to use more pitches. And then, yeah, this year too, like he has great stuff, but there is something that just feels a little off. And it's hard to explain, but part of me is a little concerned. I don't know. Maybe it's a pressure thing. Maybe it's the idea of like pitch well and you can be a top five pick in the draft. You know, maybe it's the expectations that are now on him, you know, being that Friday night starter, or maybe it is just nothing. And maybe we will see the Chase Nolander that we all know and expect. But yeah, there is just a little bit of a part of me that's it's officially reached a worry of mine. And, you know, A&M, they're going to be ready. I mean, they just saw that LSU pitching staff last week.
Yeah.
They just came off of a weekend seeing, you know, the argument for maybe the other best pitching staff in the country. You know, Paul Skeens, remarkable what he's done so far this year and how he's looked. So, you know, Chase Nolander's got to be ready to bring it. You know, A&M's going to be ready to bring it. Chase Nolander's got to be ready to bring it. And, I mean, like you said, heading to Baton Rouge next weekend, there's no time to waste for this team. You know, it's the second SEC series of the year, but it'll also it kind of has a must win feeling to it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't lose your first two series of the year and then put yourself in a situation where you have to go, you know, play one of the best team in the country in their building with your backs all the way against the wall. You need something going right for you. You need to get your foot, you know, your feet one in front of the other and back on the tracks before you get to Baton Rouge.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think if we see the same thing again this weekend, that's where I'm going to be where you're at. Where, okay, I'm concerned now. And it'll be interesting to see if they do anything to adjust if we see that type of thing again. You know, going back to Morehead State, he had a 27-pitch first inning. You know, and it was a different story because they weren't touching him up. They weren't hitting him around. He just kept missing glove side. So, and he was heavy slider in that game early on. So, yeah, it, but then he bounces back and it's the second inning on is like it never happened. Granted, it was Morehead State, but, you know, we kind of see that a little bit with Missouri. You know, after that first inning, he kind of found a way to get around it. So, yeah, I think, obviously, that's the key, right? Go first through the order without giving anything up or very little and give this lineup, you know, a different perspective maybe because, you know, when they get punched in the mouth early, down 3-4 runs, this is – it's going to be a tough – this offense, man, it's – they're not built to really come back from behind, you know, it dig themselves out of a hole, much like the basketball team, right? We've talked about that with the basketball team, but we'll see how they respond. I'm anxious to see it. I like this matchup. I really do. This, you know, obviously you would want Mississippi State to come to town in a situation like this. But the Aggies, you know, it's not like bringing in somebody that's real polished and everything. The Aggies have some work to do. Yeah, they made it to Omaha last year. And Schlossnagel, he's one of my favorite coaches. He's the guy's a dude, and he knows what he's doing. So that's their grit and their toughness allowed them to reach Omaha last season. They're going to have to rely on that again because, you know, looking at this lineup, they've got a good core. I mean, you can't mention A&M without mentioning Jack Moss. He's really good. And then he's got a couple of guys behind him, around him, that really make this offense go. Hunter Haas, Austin Boast. Haas is hitting .413 on the year. I think he's the only Aggie in qualified plate appearances with an OPS over 1,000. And overall as a team, we'll look at it here in just a second. Not crazy numbers offensively. But Jack Moss, 333 on the year, 909 OPS. Austin Boast, he's been pretty consistent, 278 hitter. But the freshman, Jace Lavalette, he has been really – he's their team leader in home runs with 4 home runs. They don't have a ton as a team. But he is a really talented freshman outfielder that I think is going to be a star in the college ranks for the Aggies going forward. We'll see what he continues to do in SEC play, but those are the 4 that I have to watch. Like I said, they're going to have to be tough week in and week out. You know, that their theme last year, kind of just, we hear it all the time, don't get swept. Don't dig yourself a grave. And that's what they did last year. And we're able to just, they kept battling with teams. And the next thing you know, they make it to Omaha. You know, they just make it to the postseason and go on a run and find themselves in Omaha. So that's it for me on the lineup. They do have 29 of 34 bags on the year. So not an alarming rate, but they've been really efficient. So that's something to watch because it's not an overwhelming offense, but they do have a couple of guys, particularly Jack Moss, that can turn a game for you. What does this Aggies lineup do for you, Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it, like Jack Moss. Obviously, he has been that dude. I mean, he is that dude. And then Hunter Haas, too, has been off to a great start. You know, I look back to the Sunday, or I guess – yeah, the Sunday game, pardon me, against LSU. And I do think that, like, that's a situation maybe where, you know, that gives A&M a lot of confidence, a lot of momentum, you know, heading into this series. And, you know, it was I guess, Tucker that broke the tie there, and then Haas had the big hit to get it up to 8-6. But, you know, that – tough win against LSU after going down 4-0 after going down the first 2 games. Lineup started to heat up a little bit. Hunter Haas, man, was 4-5 with 3 RBI. But, you know, Austin Boast got a hit. Jordan Thompson a hit. You know, a couple RBIs for a pinch hitter in Stanley Tucker. Like, I wonder if he finds himself working the lineup a little bit more this week. I just do think this lineup's going to have a pretty high confidence level, though. After coming back against, again, you know, A&M, and then putting up 8 runs against Rice on Tuesday.
Yeah, like I said, not overwhelming statistics offensively. And we'll go ahead and take a peek at it because we're going to talk about the rest of the SEC. And as we see here, A&M, they're averaging pretty much 8 runs a game. These stats were after last weekend, so the midweek this week, not taken into account for any of these teams, but probably doesn't change a whole lot of the story. A&M averaging a shade, right around 8 runs a game, given up about 4.5. They beat Rice 8-7 in that midweek game. A&M 145 whip as a team. That's getting into that kind of danger zone, that 1-5 area. But what's concerning to me, before the Rice game, I didn't look at the Cato walk in that one game. Not too concerned about it, because on the season as a whole before that, 2.2 Cato walk as a team. That's concerning to me. And as you see, the Vols not far off from the Aggies in terms of offense. That Tennessee averaging 8 runs a game. Their OPS, 977. A&M, 824. Like, in the SEC, for SEC type of competition, like, below 900 is kind of – that's when you kind of want to take the microscope out and see what the offenses are doing. Vanderbilt's the outlier here offensively. Weak numbers offensively, 6.9 runs per game, 374 on base, 825 OPS. But look at what they did last week. We were kind of concerned about them. We knew that they had deep pitching, but the offense hadn't been there. They come away with a sweep the first weekend of SEC play. And it's because of their pitching. They're able to dominate that way. Whip, a team whip of 109. That's amazing. But Tennessee, far and away the darling of the bunch when it comes to pitching. Team with a whip of 9.6 before the midweek game, of course, against Western Carolina. That probably increased or, got better. K to walk for the Vols, 5.3, outstanding. K per 9, 12.3, outstanding. And I don't have these teams power ranked yet. This is kind of – I did kind of group them together. LSU at the top, without a doubt. But then you've got from South Carolina, Vandy, Florida, Arkansas, Missouri, Tennessee, A&M. That's – I feel like the bottom four that I've got here, Mississippi State is by far – just like LSU is at the top – LSU is by far the bottom dweller. I mean, Mississippi State by far the bottom dweller. But Auburn, Georgia, Kentucky, and I'll bring in even Bama. Those four right there, I'm really, really suspicious about. But everybody else, you pretty got a good idea. Of course, things can change, and it's just one week into SEC play. But any teams stick out to you? Any performances from last weekend, Charlie, that you're going to circle going forward?
I'll tell you this. I'm very intrigued by the Missouri and South Carolina. South Carolina, just whooped up on Georgia last weekend. It was a close game in the first one Saturday, 5-4, but then they won like 12-2 and like 12-2 again or 12-1. Just really, they've looked like a great team all year long. Just that one loss to Clemson, and then they dropped a midweek game this weekend, this past week. But another one of those teams like Missouri, you feel like they're really good. The competition still hasn't revealed just how good they are. We have a better feeling right now about South Carolina than we'd still do Missouri, I think. So I just kind of want to see how both of those teams look against each other. The battle of the Columbias. I want to see how Missouri follows up such a massive weekend to then have to go on the road and, match that level of play again. Because that's the big part about the SEC. It's not just, do you have the ability, to play at a high level? It's, can you week in and week out traveled across the Southeast, play the best baseball players in the country, and sustain a level of play? You know, can you deal with the bumps and the bruises and the grind of it all? So, you know, Missouri, hats off to them. They've looked great this year, and they just whooped up on Tennessee, quite frankly, and embarrassed Tennessee. But, you know, the next part of it is, great, cool, you swept Tennessee. What's next? You know, you have to go to South Carolina. Show me what you got again. And the next weekend, it'll be, you know, show me what you got again. And the next weekend, and the next weekend, and the next weekend, because that just is the SEC. It's not like it gets a whole lot easier. You know, you go to Kentucky the next week, but then it's Vandy, and then it's A&M.
Yeah, you mentioned the game going on in the other Columbia this weekend. I'm looking forward to that one. Most people are probably like, what in the world? Like, but if you've listened to the podcast, you know that we were a little high on both of those teams, particularly South Carolina. And this is no surprise to me. It's only week two, but one, if not both of these teams are really going to climb the ladder this year. And I know it's hard to fathom because it's like, okay, well, you got LSU, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Arkansas, Ole Miss. You know, Ole Miss got swept, you know, in the first week. So it's hard to fathom, but I'm telling you, it's going to happen. These teams are a lot better this year. I'm excited for the matchup. I'm excited for the odds. I want to see where these teams are priced tomorrow. And, you know, if you're Tennessee, you know, you're joining four other teams that got swept. And I mentioned Ole Miss, Georgia, of course, Mississippi State, Auburn. So you're not the only one that got punched in the mouth. So, you know, there's that. But as it pertains to the rest of the landscape, so many good matchups this week. We mentioned South Carolina, Missouri, LSU, Arkansas. That game, it was just announced, the Friday game is moved to 1 p.m. Eastern now. Ole Miss in Florida, Kentucky and Alabama. That's what I'm looking for, because I'm not high on either of those teams, but Kentucky has put up some impressive numbers so far. We see the whip of 107 as a team, pretty much a 3-1 K to walk rate. Pretty good. The pitching's been there for Kentucky, which is kind of a surprise to me. And in terms of offensively, a 936 OPS. I mean, yeah, they played Mississippi State and swept them, but they look good non-conference. And they're ranked now. I did not expect that. They're kind of transfer you this year. And so, you know, how do they match up against Bama? I'm not particularly high on Bama, but they put up some good numbers as well. On base of 466, which was tied with LSU as a team after week one last year. So that one's interesting to me. But the one we're both focused on the most, no doubt, Tennessee, Texas A&M this weekend. The Vols will try to rally and bounce back, get that first series win in the SEC. Charlie, do you have – I know you're into the basketball heavy right now, but, you know, anything you're circling this week in terms of the SEC, if – I know you mentioned South Carolina, Missouri. You going to be betting any college baseball?
I'm not betting college baseball all that much until college basketball ends. Want to see some prices, you know, first too. Obviously, we haven't gotten to see them yet. Series you mentioned, though, Kentucky and Alabama. I want to see, you know, what the line is on Kentucky, because they are going on the road, but, you know, their numbers have been really good this year. They're ranked. If the number's there, I'm going to take Kentucky all three games in this series, because I think they're going to take two out of three. I really do. I think Kentucky's going to go on the road. I think they're going to take two out of three. Other than that, you know, I'm not super interested in betting on Arkansas LSU. I'm not super interested in Vandy, Mississippi State. You know, I'm again, South Carolina, Missouri, that depends on what it's priced at. Could, you know, if there's some value on either side of that matchup this weekend, you know, that's a series that I would be looking to bet as well. But I don't love the way these three series set up from a gambling perspective. I mean, maybe if the price is there on Ole Miss too, you know, them to bounce back against Florida, we'll see. I don't know. Right now, still, I'm more in my basketball gambling mode.
Oh yeah, for sure, without a doubt. And I've relied on you a couple of times because I'm heavy in the college baseball. And man, if you followed me on Pigot last Friday, we hit a banger, a 4-0 day, up over 4 units. And it could have been even sweeter had the LSU game, or was it LSU? No, the Wake Forest game. If it hadn't gotten postponed, we would have hit a parlay, a 3-leg parlay. But nonetheless, we had a round robin, and we got paid out for that. And I still doubled down the next day on Wake in a spot and got that going. So we're getting heated up here. It's SEC play. This is when the real season starts, and this is my favorite time of the year to bet against college baseball. It's my wheelhouse. I need to tone down on betting the West Coast and the Big 12 and things like that. There are edges there and value, but this is my bread and butter right here, and I can't wait for some of the lines to open up. We've got Georgia and Auburn tonight. Follow us on the Pigot app. Go download the Pigot app. Use promo code 920LOGAN. It's free. You'll even get a few bucks. You'll get like $3, or you got a 1 in 100 chance to get $100 free. And so sign up, follow our picks. Charlie is heavy into college basketball, been doing real well all season there. Lots of tournament left. And certainly lots of college baseball left. You can follow me. I think I may have a pick or two tonight. There's Duke, North Carolina as well. But if not, definitely, definitely, definitely plenty to choose from over the weekend. Stay tuned with us. Like I said, I'm Logan Quinton at LDQ Sports. He's Charlie Collier at CCollier64. Charlie, any parting thoughts before we leave?
Really just one. Just go Vols. That's really my last part.
It's not like there's not a basketball game tonight or anything.
We're recording this right now on a Thursday afternoon at 2:00. Get me through these next 7 hours. Those are my parting thoughts.
Well, we helped you. I hope I helped you. You certainly have helped me the past 40 minutes, folks. If you need a breather, if you need something to, you know, gauge your interest, you know, look at the 920 podcast. We're on SoundCloud, Spotify, YouTube. Perfect for a little mix up in between the basketball, and then we're full steam ahead. As soon as basketball's over with, we're hitting it hard with this college baseball. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Vols Aggies. Bounce back spot this weekend. Looking forward to it. We'll catch you next week.